Next, it's my pleasure to introduce Toby Hare. Toby Hare is the founder and director of Project Match, a research and service welfare to work program that has been serving the Cabrini Green housing development in Chicago since 1985. The research arm of Project Match was affiliated with Northwestern University from 1985 to 1992, is now part of the Erickson Institute, a graduate school and research center for advanced study and child development, where Ms. Hare is a research associate. During 1994 and 1995, Ms. Hare served as a consultant to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, providing technical assistance to its four-state post-employment services project and to designated Head Start Family Services Center. And Toby, that's also where I met her, I think, first time, when the three of us worked on the first welfare reform bill. That was the bill that didn't go anywhere. Anyway, my pleasure to introduce Toby Hare.
I'm always amazed when I listen to Demetra, and from Demetra you get the perspective of an economist, and for me you get the perspective of a human developmentalist. So it's a very we look at the world in quite a different way. Like Project Match, Wisconsin has used the metaphor of a ladder to conceptualize and sort of illustrate its approach to a full participation mandatory welfare system. And the W-2 programs created this ladder with the top rung as a subsidized job and then a unsubsidized job, starting with an unsubsidized job and then a subsidized job and then what they call community service. And then there's sort of the lowest group, the bottom rung is the W-2 transitions group, often called the difficult to serve group. So this morning I'm going to outline what we have learned about those on Wisconsin's highest rung, and that is those who can get jobs but might need some assistance to stay in the workforce and to advance in the workforce, which is what Demetra was referring to, the problem of moving people forward in the workforce. And I'm also going to talk about the lowest rung group, and that's the group for whom available work prep activities might be just too demanding. And understanding how to promote the progress of these two groups, the top group and the bottom group, is actually going to be key to the success of welfare reform, because the two middle groups are going to either move up or they're going to move down. And so those are going to be the largest groups. The information I'm going to share is derived from three sources: what we've learned from operating a program, working with over 850 welfare recipients over 12 years, many of whom have remained in the program for several years. Two, what we've learned from our own analysis of monthly longitudinal data that we've collected on our participants over several years. And three, what we've learned from studying other programs, and particularly our own research studying Portland, Oregon's post-employment program. It was a federal demonstration program. I'm going to organize my comments around, my remarks around four topics. First, I'm going to walk you through five prototypical pathways to illustrate what the process of leaving welfare is about when you take a longitudinal sort of human development perspective. Second, I'm going to describe a pre- and post-employment approach for the group on the top rung of the ladder. Then I'm going to describe what we call an incremental ladder approach for the bottom rung group. And finally, if there's time, I'm going to just briefly sort of mention a concrete tool that we've created in testing in Chicago in a welfare department and in Iowa for actually operationalizing these ideas. So I'm going to start with the five pathways. You have them in the front of your briefing paper. The first three pathways are going to be work pathways. I'm going to sort of go through them rather quickly. The first one is a steady advancement pathway, and that means that someone gets, you know, into a program or gets going on their own, and they move rather steadily along. There aren't any major setbacks for them. And in this case, it's a failure in a GED, but this is someone who came into the program 9 years ago when the salary was $335. Anyway, and you could see that she sort of moved along here, and then along the way, which is absolutely key to advancement, she went back to school, she got an AA degree, she actually eventually transferred to a four-year program. So that's what one route looks like. Some people take that route all the way on their own, and some people, like in the case of this woman, need a tremendous amount of assistance every step along the way. The welfare cycler route, there's been a lot written about welfare spells. This is a group that gets on welfare, they get off of welfare, they might stay off a year, 2 years, and then something happens and they get back on again. And so this is sort of that particular case. My own opinion of this group is this is a group that can keep a job. That's not the problem. Something else happens with children, with family, with something in their personal life, and in this or something. In this particular case, she was a great worker, and she got into it with her supervisor, and she walked off the job. And as you can see, she had trouble regaining that salary. She still didn't regain it at 5 years. She has regained it at this point. The next one is the job cycler route. This is a group that is sort of a buried group in the statistics because they come up as the continuous users. As you can see from the shading, in these 5 years, she never really lost her grant. So while she worked a good part of the time, she was always on a reduced grant. So she doesn't even get into the welfare cycler group. So this is a very important group. Clearly, their welfare recipients work more than anyone thinks they work. And the problem and the question and the strategy for this group is to make sure that they have this assistance when they lose a job to get back into the workforce very quickly. And that was sort of the secret with this woman. There was help because she was in the program. And every time she lost a job, she got help to get back. And she got back really very quickly. And she did finally stabilize. You know, you can ask me questions. There's interesting reasons why her salary went down, but she has a very good reason for it. Anyway, those are the three work routes. Now we're going to go to the very lowest group. And these are two of the routes for the very lowest group. And after seeing all the movement in and out of jobs, we began to question whether there had to be a sort of steady, you just mentioned supported work, is there a steady, more gradual way for people to sort of, you know, move up and gain the skills and confidence and stabilize? And so this is a program through a federal demonstration at Head Start, where you could see we just started looking at and asking what can people do in their roles as parents and members of community, what are they already doing sort of outside the welfare to work field that we could build on. And that's really what we did here. So she volunteered, and then we created sort of an internship position for her where she was paid, and then she made the transition to work with assistance. This person needed assistance along the way, and she's done very well, and she's off welfare now. Finally, this is the alternative. I'll talk a little bit more about it. This is the route. There are going to be people that can sort of improve their lives and improve the lives of their children and community, and they might never end up in a subsidized job, but we need to figure out what we can do to improve the lives of, you know, these people and their families. And at any point along the way, people can go from taking their child somewhere and being involved in something to getting a job. It happens very quickly. Now I'd like to talk about I'm going to talk about the top group, the group that can work. I mean, this is absolutely a very, very key group. What are we going to do with this group that can work and that either are going to cycle in and off of welfare, in and out of jobs, and how are we going to stabilize them? And the question is, if we look at the current system, the question is, does the current system sort of support this movement in these sort of phenomenon of job turnover, recidivism, and being stuck at entry-level jobs? And then the question is, what would a system that was specifically designed to do that, what would that look like? So you see, Model 1 is the standard program. People look at it and they're not so sure, but actually I don't think I've ever talked to a group that didn't finally acknowledge that this is in fact the way programs are structured, whether it was the jobs program or JTBA programs, and that is a sort of linear, predictable lockstep. You come in and you're assumed you're going to have an orientation, an assessment. You have sort of a narrow set of things to choose from, and you go into the workforce and you're never going to return, and we just the data just doesn't support that. Possibly a third, I think the welfare spell study show about a third of people who come on welfare actually get off and stay off. So for the majority of the people, Model 1 really doesn't support them. Basically, what happens is if you leave welfare, you lose a job, you have to come all the way around again to start over as if you're just sort of a new person again instead of continuing where you left off. So we've created Model 2. And you can see it's nonlinear. It's sort of moves back and forth. It's dynamic. It extends over a longer period of time. In fact, Model 2 sort of picks up where Model 1 left off. Model 1 is basically pre-employment services, and Model 2 is pre- and post-employment services. And sort of the sort of centerpiece of it is that you can there's flexibility around sequencing. You can start with education. You can work first and then have education, combine it. And also, clearly, the retention assistance, helping you to keep the job, to help you stabilize when you're in the job. If you lose a job, the goal is to treat it as a non-event, to get you back into the workforce as quickly as possible. And then once you've stabilized, then to focus on advancement, going back to school, looking for a better job. So that's sort of the Model 2. That's what we do in our own program. We've tried to move that. We've never interested in replication. So instead of sort of trying to make little project matches, what we've done is try to study larger programs to figure out how to do this on a larger scale. And that's what sort of brought us to studying the things. That is what brought us to studying the Oregon's post-employment program. And the key lessons for that when we think of about doing it on a larger scale is, one, the idea that everyone does not have to be on a caseload. I think we have to sort of get that out of our mind. We can never do it large scale if we're putting everyone on caseload because this goes on for years. You're in a job and you're fine, and you're off a job and you need to help. So basically, we need to figure out a way for people to move in and out of programs when they need it, not as a cohort. We have a cohort mentality. You know, you come on as a cohort, but once the first time you get a job, you're no longer, you know, you don't look for a job as a cohort. You look for as a person. And we're not set up that way. And so sort of we have to figure out who needs intensive work and make sure they get it when they need it. And what we learned is the centerpiece for us of a post-employment program, and the seeds of that are everywhere. You have them in Wisconsin, is this sort of resource room networking center where they have phone banks and message centers and job leads, and people can come in and get that kind of assistance. The problem is there's still that assistance is still in a Model 1 framework. We haven't moved that assistance to the Model 2 framework. So people, it's very tough to get back into the resource room. And so what I say is we need to sort of imagine a Kinko-style program for welfare recipients, you know. You know, if you walk into Kinko's, and the biggest thing is it has to be open after hours. We are still welfare programs because we give services from 9 to 5. You know, and so if we're serious about becoming work support agencies, we have to be open hours like Kinko's are. So that's a lot of change that we have to get to. Now we're going to go to the lower group. I feel badly calling them the lower group. And for this group, we've created what we call a incremental ladder. And what we've done is, as I said before, we've realized there's going to be a group that cannot fit into the standard program. It's just too high, too many hours, too demanding, too structured, and we have to figure out how to start them in a more comfortable, sensible level. So what we've done... Oh, I'm sorry. It's on page 20 of your book, and it's also in the handout in the first section. Yeah, it's all of anything I have here is in that handout. And basically, we've incorporated Model 2, so you see the top is the advancement, you know, that you can gradually move up. And so all of the principles of Model 2 are there, but what we've added are two things. Sort of the basic structure of this ladder is gradually increasing time commitments. I think we have to take that concept very seriously. Everybody can't start with 20 hours or 30 hours, which doesn't mean you can't do GED for 4 hours a week and get something out of it. So we have to think, or you don't have to have a job for 20 hours or 30 hours. You can start with one day a week temporary job, and you move up very gradually. And we have not had that kind of flexible approach, you know, to making progress. And the other part that we've added is we've added these three new categories of activities. We've added volunteering, activities with children, and self-improvement activities. And I'll tell you a little bit about the rationale for why these are work prep. A lot of times people look at it and they eye roll. But you know, our experience is, and we sort of grounded it in really literature and education, human development, anthropology, that these are legitimate work prep activities. And so starting with volunteer, We've distinguished for under TANF, we've distinguished between volunteering and community and work experience. There are two categories under TANF, and states are kind of confused about what means what. And so, for whatever it's worth, I'll tell you what our distinction is. Work experience tends to be when they slot you into something, that you come in and you're told you're going here, you're going there, and it's pretty much an established set of hours. Volunteering is very different. You stay in your community, you select where you want to be. It's a place where you're comfortable. It's a place where you've decided that you can gain some skills there. Now, once you pick that, okay, then it's a serious commitment, and you can be sanctioned for not doing it. The other part of that is that you can actually, you can combine activities. So looking, and also you think of advisory boards. A lot of the things people doing that are work prep go on at night, they go on at weekends, and they have not been brought into the welfare to work framework. And the reason is because it's an administrative problem. We haven't figured out how to keep track of it. So we have this narrow 9-to-5, idea of when you're going to get ready for work. So, and volunteering is, we've created this own sort of ladder where you kind of move from unscheduled. I realize working at the Head Start, a parent comes in and stays for the day, and they might put in 5 or 6 hours, but they didn't plan ahead. So that's sort of one level. They're very different than the parent that says, I'll be there Tuesday and Thursday from 9 to 12. And so if you're trying to prepare for your work, you've got to move them from unscheduled to scheduled hours. So that's sort of part of the progression that we've created. And then we created a top position that was an intern, and they received $75 a month for that. And so I think that there's a lot of promise within the agency's Head Starts and schools and all sorts of after-school programs, but we need to build this progression within them, which is not the case. And I think that a stipend in these settings is a very promising pathway that has pretty much been ignored. Parent-child activities, we realize the same parents that can't get their children, can't get themselves to school and to work, can't get their children. So we sort of reasoned, hey, there's something going on here about being able to organize around a schedule. That seems to be a very key thing to get ready for work. And so we reasoned, if you can't, why not start with the children? Why not employability plan B, get your child to a scouts activity, go to an activity with your child, and start with a very simple schedule where you're not worrying about childcare, you're not worrying about 3 or 4 buses. And what we found is, and anybody who knows anything about communities, if you take your child to scouts 3 or 4 times, pretty soon you're the assistant scout leader. And then you have more responsibility. And these are what we call natural pathways, and we've totally ignored the way people do it naturally. And then finally, in self-improvement, there are going to be certain people who, particularly isolated and depressed people, that even taking their child somewhere is too much. So what we're recommending is start with something. I mean, the key is a schedule. It has to be a schedule. To me, that's non-negotiable. But an exercise class, a ceramics class, I mean, anything that meets regularly, that can move you out of isolation, that can get you on a schedule. And we are doing this in Chicago, and you can't believe how quickly they move once they get going. They're somewhere and they're comfortable. And then this tool that we have is this diary. And the diary lists all these activities. You can combine activities. You can be flexible about the hours, but you must move. You must do what you've committed to. And you come to these group meetings, and we keep upping the ante. So if you do something 1 month, we push you to the next step, and we push you to the next step. And people move really very quickly. So that's sort of what we've learned and what we're doing. Thank you.
I might add that at a meeting of the 7 welfare officials in the 7 Midwestern states a couple of weeks ago, when Toby made a presentation, she talked about a diary and I think a way of collecting data to manage the cases within this framework that was, I think, particularly of interest to a number of the states. Question. The question is, and the lowest rung, should they not be expected to work essentially, and should we just pay them, right, to be poor, support them?
No. I think the most important point I was trying to make is that everyone can be doing something. Okay, and that's the whole, you know, the centerpiece, you know, the principle of the main principle is that everyone can be doing something. And so it's up to the state in a way or the program to create a ladder so that there is absolutely something for everyone to do. And that's exactly what we do. Even if it starts with just getting your children to school, which we have a legal obligation to do as a parent. So, and I guess what I'm saying is if you can find the right step for people, they will begin to make progress. It's actually shocking to see how fast people move if you start them at the right step. It's much harder when you start them high and make them fail down. And so I would say no. I would, for me, anyone that gets any grant should have some obligation, even if it starts with 2 hours a week, you know, taking scouts. If your children aren't going to school regularly, that's your plan. And then as soon as you master that, you drop that from the plan, and then you up the ante and up the ante. It's a question of getting people going and figuring out how to get them going and then figuring out what the next step for them is.
The question is, do schools have a role in this process by having resource rooms or other scheduled activities?
Well, schools can have a role. I mean, I think we better begin to look at the schools. I think they have the parents. They have the roles and they have the activities for them to be doing. And the problem with the schools and the Head Starts have been they have parent volunteers, but they haven't conceptualized it as work preparation. And so they haven't sort of pushed people along. And you know, we have people that have been sort of languishing in positions in schools. And so they don't realize and they haven't conceptualized that they need to push them forward. And so I think that we need to work with schools and the Head Starts, which we're working with Head Starts, is to help them see, you know, when to review and when to you know, think about giving someone more responsibility. I mean, it's pretty static at the schools. Those who make it, and those who don't just remain in their position.
The quote is from each according to their ability and to each according to their needs, or did I get that reversed? Yes, right.
It is a famous quote. It's actually the quote we use in our family, okay? We sort of rationalize who has to do what. I mean, that's in a way what it's saying. It's saying you have to do the most that you can do, but we're going to give you the most help we can. Do you know what I mean? Yes, that's exactly what it is. But I think what we fail to do is we have failed to create enough options so that there is something for everyone to do at which they can succeed. And then once we do that, we fail to figure out how to help them make progress. I mean, so those are both important things. You have to move them forward. I'm coming to it from sort of just the assistance part of the assistance we provide. I mean, I'm not in a position to give housing. And yes, the need is obviously, Demetra addressed sort of the more financial needs. Yes, I agree. But I'm saying from the perspective of just helping this domain of it, I mean, I think what I'm saying is that's what the help to move for the next step, the help to find the right step, the help to make sure that when you're ready to get into the market that you get job development assistance, that you get help to advance, that you aren't, once you get into the workforce, you're pretty much left on your own. So for me, that's the need part. I mean, there's a broader need part that we just can't address.